Welcome back to the Gardening with Joe and Holly radio show. Question for you. Tasha Greer will be moments away here, but question about ants. Do you have ants in your home? Do you have ants in your basement, around your property? Well, ants can be utilized by getting rid of them. They're not good. And Rescue has an ant bait trap that can fix your problem.
Yeah, ant colonies are popping up in the spring, and they seek food and moisture sources to feed their colonies. So once they establish that source, they put out pheromone trails to let their ant buddies know. And you can send these ants packing to the Rescue ant bait stations, and they'll transport the bait back to the colony, killing ants at the source. Ants look for sugars, and they look for protein. They want to feed their workers and their queens. And Rescue ant baits use both protein and sugar for a faster and more complete colony kill. Unlike other ants' baits that leak and spill bait on your floor, Rescue ant baits are spill-proof and they are mess-free. They're child-resistant and safe to use around the home. It's a better bait, no mess, and Rescue ant baits have it all. Go to rescue.com for where to buy and all their other products made in the USA.
There you go. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Yeah, Tasha Greer is a homesteader and writer focused on simple and sustainable living. She is the author of Grow Your Own Spices and the blogger on simplestead.com. Welcome to the program, Tasha.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day to join us on the program.
So you refer to yourself as an Epicurean homesteader. What does that mean to you?
Well, when I first started homesteading, I was kind of just trying everything, and I was spending a lot of time on the wrong kind of activities. So I finally realized that I needed to have some sort of philosophy to guide my decisions, and so I kind of stumbled along the idea of Epicureanism, and it's really kind of like taking a whole perspective look at the activity, deciding if you're really going to enjoy it, and also if it's going to get you the sort of long-term benefits that you're looking for. So it's an ancient Greek philosophy, and I'm applying it in modern terms, but it's really kind of helped guide my decisions, and just to find ways to homestead successfully without stress, with more pleasure. I didn't want it to be hard. I wanted to have fun.
Without stress. I think that's kind of the key word in that description.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think, we're not used to doing these things. We're used to going to the grocery store and, going to just buy what we need. And so when you first start doing it, it's a little bit overwhelming. So it seems so hard. But now that I've been doing it for, over 10 years, I realized that I made it a lot harder than it needed to be. This is basic human stuff that people have been doing forever. And now we've got the internet and books and things to make it a lot easier. And so I think it's like when I realized how simple things could be, it just all kind of started to click.
Yeah, the things, if we knew now what we wish we knew then, things would be a lot easier in life and in all aspects.
Yes, definitely. But that's actually what I try to share on my blog, is to try to make it easier for other people. Because, I think a lot of, at least back when I started homesteading, there were a lot of new homesteaders sharing information. And so what we were all sharing was like our challenges and what was so hard about it. And so we're all going into it thinking it has to be hard. But now that I have a bit more experience, I'm like, okay, let me tell you what's really simple about it. And that way you can maybe kind of shortcut around some of the more challenging parts.
Exactly. Now you have goats, and many people may want to raise goats. Why should people who are able to, and all the laws are followed in their municipalities or areas, why should people raise goats, and maybe why shouldn't they raise goats?
I think, first and foremost, if you, like goat's milk, if you like making cheese, if you like goat's meat, in the U.S. we don't need a whole lot of goat meat, but in other countries it's kind of a staple meat source, so... I think first and foremost, you need to like these things. And, that kind of gets back to the Epicurean side of things. So if you don't like them, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of incentive to keep raising goats long term. But if you enjoy those things and, want those products, then then you need to also look at your landscape, because a lot of people think that goats are grass eaters, and they will eat grass, but they're really more weed eaters. They eat all sorts of different weeds and things like that. So, you know, like I live on the mountainside, and so we have all sorts of crazy weeds and things in this deforested area that's around our house. And so it's like a perfect place for them to find all the things that they would really like to eat rather than just eating a grass pasture. And so, you know, I think if you like goats and you have the right landscape for it, then, you know, you're already partway there. But you also need to understand that it's a long-term commitment. These animals, you get really attached to them, particularly if you milk them. So, you know, even if you your goat gets a little bit older, it's kind of hard to let go when you've been bonding with them twice a day, every day for, you know, 10 years. And, you know, it's kind of like having pets. So, you know, it's a very fun experience being with goats and making them part of your life. So in that respect, it's good. But I think a lot of people don't realize how much the daily commitment is, you know, that you have to clean the barn, because they do need shelter. If you're keeping them on the stand, then you will also need to, you know, give them grain, which means trips to the feed store. And so there's a lot to it. So I really think it comes down to that idea. Are you going to enjoy being with goats long term? And if that's the case, then it's really rewarding. You get this amazing milk. But if you're not sure, you're on the fence, then I really recommend that maybe see if you can find a friend who has goats and maybe volunteer to take care of their goats while they go on a day trip or a weekend trip before you go getting a lot of goats.
I just know, like, people, you know, people see the videos on social media, YouTube, and they're like, oh, goats are so cute, you know, and the baby goats in their pajamas and whatever. And, like, I think people kind of romanticize and idealize raising a goat. And it's definitely, like you said, it's a commitment. You become attached, and you definitely have to have the space and everything for it. So that's some great information. Now, your book, Grow Your Own Spices No Matter Where You Live, looks really intriguing. Many people do try to grow new and exciting things. I know we have ourselves, and sometimes we don't do so well. What is something in your book that would encourage our readers to check it out and find success, especially spices we may not realize that everybody can grow?
I think it's a really good question. And for me, I try to know the plant before I grow it. I don't just go out and look at a growing guide and find out, you know, what the temperature requirements are. I kind of dig deeper and I try to find out, you know, where did it grow natively? What were the conditions? What was the humidity like? What were the temperatures like? How did it grow, you know, in its native habitat? And then I try to figure out how to create those circumstances at home, you know. And so I think even with our vegetable gardens, it's like we just look at a quick growing guide and, oh, okay, I just, you know, need a little compost in my soil and I just need it to be this warm so I can plant the seeds. But we don't always think all the way through to, you know, how long is it going to take to a harvest? Do we have the right pollinators? You know, is it going to withstand the winds in our area? So with spices, you really have to nail the conditions, because a lot of them are very acclimated to specific climates. And so you can't just throw it out in your garden and have it go right. You know, even cumin is like it's a sea spice. It's really pretty easy to grow. But if you live in a really super hot area where it's humid all the time, you might not even get a good crop unless you start it indoors early and, you know, and then eventually transplant it outside before it gets too warm and humid. So, you know, you really need to understand and make a plan for how to actually get a harvest. And I think, you know, everybody just wants to start the plants, but they don't always think all the way through the entire life cycle of the plant and what it's going to need as it gets closer to, you know, its mature harvesting stage. And so I think any plant, spices or anything in your garden, it's really good to do deeper research and really get to know the plant before you start growing it.
I think very, very good advice on that. Now, you teach a course on edible landscaping. What is edible landscaping and how can one start incorporating that into their own their own yard.
Yeah, that's a lot of people, you know, we grow like a little vegetable garden or something, and that's a great place to start. But we also have like these whole front yards, and you have like shrubbery and things like that that are just kind of, covered with some mulch, and they have all this space around them. So edible landscaping is a way to use the landscape that you have already in place and start to tuck in some edibles and get even more out of your overall landscape than you would from just a little vegetable garden. So you kind of start looking for analogs. Like if you have some kind of flowering, a flowering cherry or a flowering dogwood in your front yard, well, then you can probably grow an actual cherry that will give you fruit, or you might be able to grow an apple, something similarly sized, and get food from it rather than just have a flowering plant. They'll still have beautiful flowers, and they'll also then have, some kind of food source. And a lot of people don't realize how beautiful some of these plants are when you put them in a grouping. You know, it's like a row of potatoes isn't that interesting, but if you tuck some potatoes in with some lettuce and some cabbage, it can get a whole lot more beautiful. So edible landscaping is kind of getting out of the row mindset or the bed mindset and starting to look at your vegetables and fruits and draw comparisons between those and the decorative plants you're using, and see if you can find things that appeal to your decorative, your aesthetic ideas, as well as the things you want to eat. And so I think a lot of people think you have to do everything 100% edible, but you don't. You can mix and match. You can put your favorite ornamentals in there, and you can put in your vegetables. You can, have a lot of perennial plants and then also incorporate some annuals. People go out and buy those little annual, trays of flowers to put underneath their, their plants in spring or something, but you could easily do the same thing with like a very beautiful assortment of lettuce. So it's really just kind of starting to think about incorporating some food into more traditional landscapes. And, especially people like, I used to live in the suburbs, and, there were things that we just weren't allowed to do in our front yard. And so edible landscaping gives you an opportunity to incorporate food in ways that are beautiful and, aren't going to offend your neighbors. So it's, and then they also, a lot of the edible foods that we like are also really good for pollinators, any of the flowering plants that we like. It's just a way to get out into your garden and grow some food.
Well, absolutely. And, an oak tree produces great shade and leaves for the garden, but a pear tree or an apple tree produces great shade for the garden, but also at a mature state, several hundred pounds of produce as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even better if you can grow both, because an oak tree will feed all of your pollinators. Basically it's an excellent food source for a lot of caterpillars, and those feed the birds, and the birds help you with pest control. So if you could have an oak and an apple, that's even better, because you're going to get fruit. You're going to, it becomes a whole ecosystem rather than just, some food. And so when you start to integrate these things, I think you get a much better result. And a lot of people also don't realize how many things that we don't think of as food are edible. So oak, for example, acorns, You can collect those acorns and you can make acorn flour. I make an acorn soup that tastes a whole lot like a chestnut soup. And so there are even, some decorative plants that have some edible aspects to them that people just don't really think of them that way.
Definitely. So how can we find out more about you? How can listeners find out more of your great information?
Well, I have a blog called simplestead.com. It's kind of a sort of contraction of simple and homestead, simplestead.com. I'm also on Instagram at exploresimplestead.com, or I'm sorry, exploresimplestead on Instagram, and also on Facebook under simplestead. So all of those places. Of course, I've got my book, Grow Your Own Spices, and it is definitely a handbook for growing spices, but it's also a way to get to know the plants There's some herbal medicine tips in there from my friend Lindsay, who did added some really amazing information so you can use these spices, not just to eat them, but to improve your well-being. And absolutely stunning illustrations also from Greta Moore. So I definitely, if anyone's interested in growing spices, I think it's more than just my work. It's just a beautiful book. A lot of people did great things inside.
Well, Tasha, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to share your knowledge and and your book with not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you. For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.